Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we've got so many comic books to talk about today, so let's go.
Oh, my God. Too many.
Never too
many.
Just
the right
amount. We love comic books. More comic books, I say. Let's kick it off, though, with a big one. Avengers Assemble Alpha from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron, art by Brian Hitch, Andrew Curry, and Alex Sinclair. This is bringing together every story that Jason Aaron has been telling at Marvel pretty much since the beginning at this point.
Since birth.
It tells the story of his mommy and his daddy and how they got together, and now they had a beautiful baby named Jason Aaron. And then it kind of goes
very
from there.
Graphic.
Oh my God.
This is very specifically starting with the stuff that he's been weaving through his Avengers books, but it is going to be working at everything that he's been working with the entire time. So we get the setup here of our Avengers traveling back in time to the prehistoric Avengers, teaming up with Avenger Prime, who is at a fortress in the center of the multiverse that is being attacked by multiversal Mephistos, who are also working with slash controlling the multiversal Masters of Evil. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. But like we say with, I think, every single issue that Jason Aaron writes of Avengers, this is like watching the best version of somebody playing with a box of toys.
Yeah, and smashing them together. This issue specifically, like, smashes together so many different things. By the time we meet this next team of, like, evil Avengers later on, I'm like, oh my God. And that's smash-ups of smash-ups with, like, young Thanos, the Black Skull, which is like a red skull with venom. It is a wild ride, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I was having a blast up until the Mephisto showed up, but it was just
That was page two, I want to say.
Yeah.
You were having a blast.
I knew this was going to happen when I read this.
Just the very idea
of Mephisto here. But here's the thing, Pete. I understand you have a problem with things that Mephisto, the representation of the devil, who everybody knows is evil. You don't like him for something, like, you got it out for him.
That's what drives me nuts about Mephisto, is people treat him like he's not evil. They'll make deals with them, and he's just into breaking up marriages.
Right here, based on that objection, he is straight up 100% pure villainy trying to take over the entire multiverse. And there's a double page spread that Brian Hitch draws of all these multiversal Mephistos, which is one of the wildest things that I've ever seen in comics. Like, it's perfect.
Many different shapes and sizes of Mephistos, but the smile sort of rhymes on each one of them. It's really a well done page by Brian Hitch on the art.
The art is fantastic, but it's just like, there are villains. There are just so many things. Why do we need the devil, as well?
Why not?
It's one of those things that doesn't make sense in my mind.
It's everything in the kitchen sink. It's great. I mean, you can't be mad at an issue where a Red Hulk star brand from the dawn of time, who's a caveman, essentially gets turned into a mad ball, right? Like, that's what happens by the end of the issue. It's ludicrous. It's so over the top. It's great to read. Why don't we talk about another one that I'm pretty excited about?
Two other quick things on that. Use of Doom, the way Jason Aaron pulled it from every other aspect of his comic book, like you were saying, Alex, is really impressive that they are all going to come together in this comic. And B, shouts to Agamotto's eyes. Something we've heard people talking about for years. So we finally got to see him pop right out of his head. What a dream come true. That's the story I've been waiting to hear.
The Doom entrance was legendary Doom. So it was great to see. And I'm a sucker for a Doom entrance. So that was great.
Why don't we turn to another big issue, Justice Society of America, number one from DC Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Mikael Janin. This is picking up off of the new Golden Age issue, where we got a bunch of setup of stuff. Here we're following the new Huntress, who is the daughter of Bruce Wayne and Catwoman in the future, while the JSA is being hunted throughout time by, they still haven't said his name, but it's pretty clearly Perdigaton, who is time-traveling space Nazi. That's pretty much his deal. He wants to kill the JSA throughout time. This is great. This is exactly what I want out of a JSA comic from Jeff Johns. He, if you go back to his classic run on the title that he wrote with James Robinson, and then eventually by himself, he just amps up the danger for these characters and doubles down on what makes them work. There's a lot of setup in this issue, but the character of Huntress is really good. He sets up a lot of legacy heroes here and doubles down on this. This is everything that I want out of a Jeff Johns comic, plus some phenomenal art by Mikael Janin.
Yeah, I mean, it's super tight bananas art and super fun first issue start to something great. It does feel like a, you know, this is going to be a great JSA run, and it's a really cool starting point. And yeah, I'm excited for more.
excuse me. I also really like this. I feel like we talked about the other, the most recent Jeff Johns book as a return to form, for Jeff Johns. And I think this is definitely that. I love the, formation of the team that later gets killed, spoilers there. And the, especially mention of the Mist, a character, that's Starman's kid. Great to see him there. Even though it was sort of a sad ending. One thing that I think is strange, why is the daughter of Batman and Catwoman Huntress? Like, it's not like Huntress is cool, but it's not
Huntress
like...
Huntress is cool.
Huntress is cool, no knock, but it's not like Batman is like, who's my favorite person in the world? Huntress. It's like Huntress is always someone he like...
Wait, wait, all right, I think... First off... Go first ahead, off, back up the truck, Justin. You know, as a father, I think you would understand this. You can't decide what your kids are going to grow up and do. You can tell them all you want. Like, listen, you can be a bad person. You can be, you know, whatever. You know, they're going to grow up and they're going to do what they want to do. If they want to be the Huntress, you got to let them be the Huntress, and you got to support them 100%.
Think about it this way. If I die, my daughter's going to go up and be like, oh, I'm not going to be like Dad. I'm going to be like Pete. That's a concern for me. That's a major concern for me.
Yeah, everybody has their own.
I'm just saying, what about Dad? What about Batman?
You can't,
what about
you can't force
Catwoman?
I think it just comes down to Huntress is the Gotham City hero who kills. That's pretty much it. So it's the division
it's
between
not it.
You have.
There's more to her than
well,
that.
But you have the division between like the Tom King run on Batman Catwoman is saying their kid is going to be Batman or Batgirl or Batwoman or whatever she was calling herself. Right. That's who she's going to be. Like that's the thread that they're following there. What Jeff Johns is following here is this is becoming dark hero because Batman has died and going in the opposite direction. And I actually think it's one of the more interesting things to follow in terms of these future scenarios with Batman and Catwoman getting together. Like, what is the thin line between, like, Catwoman is there, Batman dies. In one scenario, she becomes a bat hero. It's like, we never kill, we never use guns. And in the other scenario, becomes Huntress, and she's like, we always kill, and we always use guns. But sometimes little, tiny little crossbows, and that's it.
Hand crossbows.
Yes. And that's what Jeff Johns is playing with versus what Tom King is playing with. And I think... I don't know. I think that's one of the lovely things about comics in the multiverse is you can have all of these things simultaneously. And it's okay. Sorry. Go ahead, Pete.
Okay. And hand crossbows are the most convenient of the crossbows to use. Okay. So don't come at hand crossbows. Okay.
Oh, sorry, man.
They're light. They're portable. They do the job. You know what I mean? Like, you know.
Pete is a door-to-door hand crossbow salesman, so that's what's going on here, in case you want any backstory.
Tough times. I love a good hand crossbow.
Listen, Pete, first off, if I'm raising my daughter to be you, cool it on me a little bit, just at this outset. Second, just a hand, how big is the arrow on a hand crossbow? It looks like a chopstick.
A criminal
gets hit with a chopstick and they're like, ouch, I'm dying?
It's all about the location, bro. It's all about, yeah, a little chopstick can cause a lot of damage if it hits the right spot. So, you know, don't come at me with that shit, bro.
Yeah, right. Real estate agents and vigilante killers concerned with location, location, location.
That's right.
That's why don't nice. We move on? If I had a hat that sat on my hand, I wouldn't be like, man, this hand hat is really way better than a regular hat. So I'm just saying, I think it's a bit of a show.
Plush number one from Image Comics, written by Doug Wagner, art by Daniel Hilliard. Just in case you're not sure what you're getting into with this comic, this is the same team from Vital and a couple other absolutely off-the-wall books. Here we get a guy who gets taken to a plushy furry convention and finds not only is he embroiled with some bad stuff going on with the town's police force, but also there's some sort of carnivorous real furries that are wandering through. This is like a fever dream that I'm reading, which was the same thing as Vital. It works, but it is wild to read.
Yeah, it's fucked up in a way. Not the content, the story being about people going to a furry convention. The way it's told and just some of the visuals really like are unsettling. But it wasn't good for what that is. I thought it was good and fun. It reminded me a little bit of an Ice Cream Man-esque standalone issue.
Oh,
if this was a story that would be told there, we don't really get the moralizing at the end that you get a lot of Ice Cream Man stories. But otherwise, that sort of like unsettling out of reality stuff feels very Ice Cream Man.
The problem I had with the mistake that I made was I didn't do a good job of arranging my stack. Because I read Lovesick before I read Plush, okay. And I was ruined by that horrible comic that, you know, we talk about like the stack. Zeldman said, oh, the stack wasn't big enough. And I was like, was one comic too big? I would have loved if we didn't have that in the stack because that was messed with me, still messing with me.
Don't spoil your later review.
Got to this immediately next comic to read, I was still too messed up to read it, and I was like, I can't.
Yeah, you were already spent by that point.
Well, yeah. I couldn't do it because I was still in the aftershock of
afterglow
something that was
no the afterglow.
Afterglow.
No, don't be weird.
So your poll quote for this is don't read it after Lovesick.
This book is pretty hardcore and wild. It is not as hardcore and wild as Lovesick, which we'll get to in a moment.
Truth.
Right. My one concern about Plush is I was really intrigued and thrown by what was going on in this issue. Things went very quickly off the rails in Vital, so I worry that's going to happen here as well. But I'm very curious to check out the second issue of this book, and hopefully it stays off the rails, on the rails at the same time. But I guess we'll see what happens.
We don't need rails. Alex.
That's right.
Catman and Kitten, number one from Dynamite, written by Jeff Parker, art by Joseph Cooper. This is following, as you can probably figure out from the title, a sort of retro superhero. It's kind of a Batman, but he has cat powers, and his partner Kitten, who doesn't have cat powers but dresses like a cat anyway, as they explore a weird mystery. Jeff Parker excels in these sort of throwback stories.
Yes.
And there's a bit of modern weirdness and strangeness thrown in here that makes me really want to see this as more of a one-shot. But I was very pleasantly surprised by this comic book.
I felt like it was just enough campy where it made it light and fun. But also like the attention to cat details, I really appreciated. The purring with that giant, tiger or leopard or whatever it was really fantastic. The way that he would kind of like run as a cat or kind of make cat poses. I really appreciated those little cat details there.
Now, Pete, did you feel like while you were reading this that you needed to puff the fluff?
yeah. It's, you know, the puff and the fluff happens clockwork. You know what I mean?
So let me just real quick, compete for those of you that don't know and think you're saying something wildly inappropriate. Can you tell us what puff the fluff is in your personal life?
Well, sure. Yeah. So sometimes if you have a cat that, you know, needs an inhaler because of, you know, some kind of lung issue, you know, you have to find a way to convince a live animal that it's okay to use an inhaler. And it's tricky. It takes a lot of patience and a lot of love. But when you love a cat, you know, what are you going to do? Let it die. You can't do that. So you got to puff the fluff twice a day, man. You know what I mean?
Puff and the what fluff, is that a very cute name for a medical procedure.
What is puffing the fluff exactly, though? You haven't said that.
It's you put an inhaler. It kind of has like a little kind of like mask you put over its mouth.
And just to be clear, this is not blowing in a cat's anus, right, Pete?
What the fuck, man?
Sorry, we're getting a lot of comments on the live stream about people asking if this is...
I'm just making sure. It's not a thing. Under no circumstances is that what you're doing.
Why would you do that?
You wouldn't do that. I'm saying it's not that.
I'm just typing because I'm dealing with all these comments asking if it's your blowing in your cat's butt, Pete. So just quick answer before they get stopped the comments from coming.
No, I don't.
Do you ever puff past the fluff?
Well, that's something completely different that does nothing to do with cats.
Anyway, so this color is very good if you're looking cat's for ass. A retro good time. Why don't we talk about
that? Well, I just have to say two more things. I haven't offered my take on the comic A.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
Oh, no, you haven't?
We got a little
art's great.
Jeff Parker does something great here in that can be sort of campy while at the same time being telling a straightforward story, which is hard to do. It feels Mark Russell also does a good job with doing stuff like this. So if you like Mark Russell and haven't read a Jeff Parker story lately, I think this is a good book for you. And secondarily, we proved once and for all with this review that Pete is the original Cat Daddy.
Oh my God.
Planet Hulk, Worldbreaker number one from Marvel, written by Greg Pak, art by Manuel Garcia and Ramon F. Box.
We couldn't get him on the show. We couldn't get him on the show before number one dropped. What happened?
I'll work on it. I knew this was Pete's issue of the week. Sold on the tile. Sold on the team.
Breaker.
They could have had like them hanging out and playing basketball the entire time, and it would not have mattered. But what we actually get here is two stories: one that takes place in the far future of Sakaar,
catching back up
with Amadeus Cho as well as Hulk himself. That's a little bit of a spoiler, but you can figure that out based on the title. And then we also get a story of Scar, the son of the Hulk, in the backstory here. Pete, take it away.
All right. First off, it's nice to have Pak back on Hulk. It's just
the backpack.
Greg Pak, you know, that guy is a great writer, and he really does the Hulk really well, and he makes fun and interesting choices. We kind of have an interesting start. I didn't expect this to kind of like take place, pick up where we did. So I was very intrigued by, you know, I was waiting for to see the Hulk smash things and like, but that's not where we're starting. It's very interesting. I'm very intrigued by all the fact that we're way in the future. We're kind of past things we know and love. So it's a kind of new beginning here for the Hulk story. I'm very excited about it. We kind of take place on Sakaar here. We're kind of figuring out who people are and kind of their family trees and where they come from. I think this is very cool and a great first issue that I think is going to lead to a lot of amazing things. I'm very excited about it.
For me, this reminded me a lot of Old Man Logan.
Oh, interesting.
But without
in a good way, you're supposed to say. When you say things that can be taken negative, usually you say, I mean this in a good way, but you didn't say it this time. So I'm just want to give you a moment to maybe say that first.
Thank you for trying to rewrite my review. I think it is
just in case Greg Pak listens. You know 100%. What I mean? Like, let's respect the Pak.
I do mean it in a good way, because I thought the melodramatic parts of Old Man Logan were all the Logan things. Like, when's he going to pop his claws? Why is he so mopey? While the Hulk side of it, even though they were sort of villains, the idea of an extended Hulk family, what it means to be a Hulk sort of generationally, and a post-apocalyptic world trying to figure out your Hulkness was cool. So I do like this, and it's coming at the story from a distance, like you were saying, Pete, and really sneaking up on maybe some of our more main characters. So curious to see where we go with that.
Also, the second story, very cool, very interesting. I'm excited to kind of deal with the son of Hulk. Yeah, I feel like he should be getting a little bit more shine, so I'm excited about it.
Yeah, you ever really puff like a Hulk?
I really like the mix of, just to wrap this up, I really like the mix of a far future story, which I was not expecting from this book at all, with a current continuity story. Very good. If you're in, you know, Donnie Cates is writing an absolutely wild Hulk story that's going on right now. If you're looking for other aspects of the Hulk mythos, I think this is a good one to check out. Why don't we turn to Blue Beetle Graduation Day number one from DC Comics, written by Josh Trulio, art by Adrian Gutierrez. Now, this is actually being released in an English version and a Spanish version, despite the fact that I am level 4 Spanish on Duolingo.
Oh, don't you fucking nut flex on us like that, dude.
I'm up to family, so I'm not quite there yet.
Wow. In Spanish, asshole.
Yeah, there you go. But anyway, I did read that. We did read this in English, just to mention. Very cool that they are releasing this bilingually, and even a part of the English issue is still in Spanish. Here we're following Blue Beetle. Per the title, he is graduating from high school and going through some hard times there. This feels like a perfect throwback to classic Blue Beetle stories. I'm very excited to see where this goes. Curious to hear if you guys feel the same.
Yeah, JT Sizzle, this was on your top of your list here, so let us have it.
I love Blue Beetle. I love Jaime's and Jaime's journey, his whole character. Everything is great. Great to see him back dealing with very much the down-to-earth stuff that any kid has to deal with, as well as the big superhero stuff, a lot of impending doom coming his way. This is DC Comics Spider-Man, he should be given the same amount of spotlight and focus, because this book is fantastic.
Yeah, I think this is a great first ish. STB, you know, the art's unbelievable. Love this character. Love the art style. More, please.
And just to be clear, STB, since you haven't established this episode, means sexually transmitted botulism, right, Pete?
No, yes, I mean super tight bananas art, brah.
Okay, nice. I guess I STBA. Made a mistake there. There you go.
I thought you meant some tropical bongos, which are my favorite.
Oh, interesting.
Here's some talk about Bob Phantom, number one, from Archie Tom Comics, written by James III, art by Richard Ortiz James and III. Juan Babil. In this issue, this takes place kind of in a different Archie Comics continuity, but it very much takes place in an Archie Comics continuity. It follows a character who is a news reporter working at a very much lower tier newspaper / clickbait website who accidentally becomes a vigilante. This one really took me by surprise. I expected it to be another straight up reboot of a classic Archie Comics character, but instead there's this sense of, is this real? Is this not real? Is this character having dissociative episodes? Plus the fact that it ties into Josie and the Pussycats and Riverdale stuff and all of these other things. I thought this was really fascinating, and I like this quite a bit. How did you guys feel?
Well, first off, let me say shouts to James III, who's a New York comedy alum, currently out in L.A., but you've seen him on Astronomy Club. He wrote for All That, I believe, on Nickelodeon, the reboot. Great comedian performer who I knew back before he went west.
Yeah, definitely. I remember sitting at the bar with him, and he was talking about getting married, you know? And he is a hilarious, amazing dude. So I was super nervous about reading this because I know him. But yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised. This was such a cool, fresh take. I felt like, you know, I loved the perspective of this, the tone of this. The art was fantastic. I felt like this was a really great first issue, and I want more. I'm super excited for James 3.
And to jump off what Alex was saying too, to take sort of some old original even comic book tropes of the reporter, detective, vigilante, and mix them up in a way that did feel new, even though we've seen that many times, and had that reality bending angle on it. And I think the art also contributed to that with this sort of comic strip, four color funnies style artwork. I thought it was a great package.
Yeah. Super great package.
Just to mention, we're going to have James on our live show later on this month, so definitely check that out. Let's move on to Star Trek.
We should have him on our live show.
Oh, my God. Star Trek number 2 from IDW Publishing, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Oleg Chudakov. This is following an all-star team of Star Trek characters as they try to figure out who has killed essentially god-tier level characters in the Star Trek universe. That's the cliffhanger that we ended up in the last issue. We're following up on that here and bringing in Worf into the fold onto this new crew.
Yeah.
This is great. This continues to be great. Like, this is exactly what I would want out of a next-gen Deep Space Nine Voyager era comic book, mashing together this Ultimates level crew with a huge threat. They're doing a great job.
Yeah, Ultimates is such a great comp. I was going to say the same thing. It has the vibe of like if J.J. Abrams' Star Trek was like really good and based in continuity and not just like sort of doing whatever it wanted. The bringing Worf into the mix, it feels like they took your favorite episodes of The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, blended them up, and just dropped them right onto your comic book stack.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are a little bit more into this than I am, but this...
No.
Yeah, you are.
No,
but I still feel like this is a great issue. Fantastic art, good storytelling, really amping things up here. So, yeah, this is fun.
Maybe you're going to get into Star Trek after this book.
Maybe.
You seem to be responding well to it. You seem to be really chipper about it.
Yeah, you start with Enterprise. Start with Enterprise and kind of work up from there, because that's the first thing continuity-wise. Yeah,
the most important thing is watching them in order of chronology, definitely.
Yes.
Not quality.
I've got Faith of the Heart that we're going to be talking about. Flawed number 3 next from Image Comics, written by Chuck Brown, art by Prenzi. I don't even know what to say about this book because I'm not 100% sure what's going on, to be honest with you. But I really love reading every issue at the same time, mostly because of Prenzi's art, but also because Chuck Brown, in particular in this issue, is writing a really interesting, like, gangster origin story, I guess, is what's going on. What do you guys think about this one? Because I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around it 3 issues in.
Well, I agree with you. I'm like, I'm not quite sure what's happening, and we get a lot of things where it's like, these guys just don't have skin. Look at them. They're hanging out, they're talking, they're having very normal conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the issue ends with like, oh, look, she's friends with the bird. And I was like, I don't
know. Listen, guys, if you're walking around without skin, you're not always talking about the fact that you don't have skin. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have everyday conversations. You know what I mean?
But so, say you walk into a party, it might be like, you may be wondering why I'm skinless.
I don't think you have to address it. I think you should just go about your business. If someone wants to talk to you about it, they can bring it up. But, you know, it's not their job to constantly, every time they walk in a room, like, yes, hey, listen, I don't have skin.
See,
don't worry.
I knew you were the kind. If I had food in my face, you wouldn't tell me. That's the kind of guy you are.
No,
I thought I wanted you to tell me.
I would tell you.
But you're not going to announce your skinlessness to a room of people who are, that's what they're thinking about.
That's on them, man. You know what I mean? If they can't get over their skin, that's just on them. I love Flawed. I think this is just a great package. The art really fits the tone of this in such a cool way. This is a very creative, unique story. They do such a good job of getting you interested in everything that's happening, even though, like you said, we're not quite sure how all the pieces fit yet, but I'm still having a great time. Ton of action and intrigue. I think this is a great comic.
The Approach, number two from Boom Studios, written by Jeremy Hahn and Jason A. Hurley, art by Jesus Hervas and Leah Caballero. Last issue, I think I described this as the thing in an airport, but that's not quite right. It's more alien in an airport more alien than anything. Yeah. But if that's what you're interested in, I think this is great. This is a really well-drawn, very creepy horror story that continues to flesh out the characters in issue two. They have a good handle on the concept. And, I don't mean this not as a compliment, but it feels like the sort of thing that is primed to be turned into a movie. It feels to me like a movie pitch waiting to happen at this point.
A good call. It feels like it's people stuck in a place dealing with an alien. And it has sort of that in-world vibe of, say, your Die Hard 2, where the characters are stuck.
They're at the airport. Yeah.
Yeah. Die Hard 2, the most famous Die Hard.
Yes.
It's not the most famous, but I mean, it's still.
Well, name another more famous Die Hard than 2.
He dies harder in Die Hard 2, Sam.
Yeah. That's exactly. Can't be worse.
There's Live Free or Die Hard. You know what I mean?
That's the one you're going to rap. Right, you're rapping Live Free or Die Hard.
Right.
That's
I'm not do what
definitely.
You expect. I'm not going to do what
definitely
you
the worst one. Yeah,
have I mentioned before that I worked on Die Hard with a Vengeance? Have I mentioned that?
In what capacity?
Yeah.
Is this where you were walking in the background? No, I was an intern. I worked for a couple of days.
You told Samuel Jack, you were like, listen, write this on a card.
I was walking around. I was dialogue coach for Samuel Jackson. No, I worked on the couple of days where they did the stunt where they jumped over the wall in Central Park with a car. That was pretty much it. But
oh, wow.
Good time. A lot of running back and forth and photocopying stuff.
Nice. That's movie magic.
I will say the one thing that stuck with me, and then we can get back to talking about this book, is there was a script page, and I think there's a boat explosion at some point in the movie, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I was photocopying that script pages, and a direction that stuck with me was the boat explodes. It's the biggest explosion in movie history.
That's a cool thing to write into your script.
You know what
that reminds me of? Lost. Your buddy's on Lost.
All right. Stop crossing the podcast.
Yeah, but I think the approach is great. I love the art style, and it does kind of have a diehard alien feel to it in all the right ways.
Diehard 2 alien feel.
Diehard 2 alien 1
feel. Just to be very clear. Spider-Man Double Trouble, number one from Marvel, written by Mariko Tamaki and Vita Ayala, art by Guri Hairu. In this issue, Miles and Spider-Man are teaming up together. It is an all-ages book, and they're checking out Spider-Man's weapons hangar as some bad stuff goes down with Miles over the course of the issue. This is exactly what you expect for the cover. You get into it. It's fun, all-ages stuff. The art is great. The writing is a delight. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, I like this. I want more of these two teaming up. This is fun. The stupid, like, just you swiping a card to get into your warehouse of weapons was fun. Yeah, but really the art is the real kind of main thing here, and it is just absolutely fantastic. Worth checking out for the art alone. This is just super cool.
Yeah, the art's really good. If you're a fan of a little book called Tiny Titans, I think this could be a book for you.
Yep.
With some just good Spider-Man action and fun.
Superman Kal-El Return Special, number one from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, Sita Grace, Marv Wolfman, and Alex Segura, art by Clayton Henry, Dean Hashbill, Jack Herbert, and Fico Osio. As you can figure out from the title, this is about Superman returning from space from War Worlds and the various repercussions from that on various characters. We get a bunch of short stories in that direction. I'm going to say something controversial first, and then we'll talk about it. I think all of these stories are good, but there's a level of, I'm like, I get Superman is back. This was not as big of a deal for me as a comic book reader as it is for everybody in continuity. And though I like these stories, this happens with Superman all the time. He disappears for 12 issues. It's fine. Let's move on from there. We don't need to double down on that.
Dude, look at you, you old curmudgeon.
Harumph, I say.
Yeah.
Well,
you're such a chiseled veteran. This happens all the time. Superman has to go away. Sometimes, you know, he's got to take care of stuff off planet. Okay, it happens. You know, everybody's got to learn to deal.
Alex, when you get home from work after not seeing your kids for several hours, don't you want to tell them what you did?
They do publish a Alex Returns special every time that happens.
every night. All right, man. Dad, we get it.
Wow. Here's four short stories about you coming back home, asshole.
Yeah, I mean, first off, amazing covers. I feel like the Mark Waid first story was silly and touching. I thought there was, you know, some of them were better than others, but it's a great collection. A weird theme of everybody eating breakfast, but still.
We all eat it.
Yeah, we all do. We call it different things, you know. But
we
I
do?
Think, well, what some do we people call it brekkie. You know what I mean? Some people prefer a brunch rather than a breakfast. You know, so there's a lot of different.
What a variety, man! What a different cultural exploration we just did there. I like this maybe more than you guys did because I thought the first story was great. Some Batman Superman QT, great use of Mr. Nobody, the Doom Patrol villain, and shouts to our guys Alex Segura and Dean Haspiel. Working on a couple of different stories here as well.
Again, I want to be very clear. I think this is a good collection of fun Superman stories. I just want to move past the like triumph parade that we're having for Superman coming back and just get on to whatever the next thing is.
Wow, dude. Wow. Guy can't go away for a business trip and we can't miss Superman if he goes away for a couple weeks.
Who cares?
All right, dude. Wow.
Who cares? 20th Century Men number 4 from Image Comics, written by Dennis Cabb, art by Sapien Morian. In this issue, we're getting almost a oral history of this ongoing war between a giant dude and another also very large robot dude. I know you guys have been loving this book, so talk about this issue.
I wish I had remembered to say this on the live show because this was my other favorite read of the week.
Now you say it is, now that we're not doing a live show.
Well, now it's in the stack. And again, a lot of comments coming through the live stream here asking about you. Just want to be sure, are you inhaling near your cat's butthole? That's the question now. If you're not blowing out, maybe you're sucking in. That's just a question.
Nope.
But let me say that I love this book. This book is fantastic. It's got big, sweeping story. I love the Suicide Cowboys, I think they're called, the sort of American soldiers who are willing to die. We talked a little bit also in the live show about how comics aren't great at confronting issues directly, and only through metaphor and allegory do they touch on things. This book, I think, is doing a great job of speaking to our modern politics without having to be like, one side is bad, one side is good. It's just talking about what war and what the ways that battle changes people and politics changes people and what they do in a heightened superhero world. And I love it.
Great.
I thought you loved this book, Pete. What's going on? Are you off it?
No. I mean, I just think that this was, you know, I was just supporting his thing because he was you really liked it. I think that this was very cool and a unique style choice and a great use of like kind of quotes to tell a narrative story. The art was great. It was very political, very well said and well put together. I was super impressed with how it went about it from start to finish.
You don't like quotes, though.
No, I thought it was great. I thought it was really powerful and moving and super well done. I mean,
the last kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
Yeah, all right, there you go.
Super impressive.
Let's talk about Koshki in Hell, number one from Dark Horse Comics.
That's how you say it.
Mignola, art by Ben Stenbeck. I gotta say, as somebody, I'm a fan of BPRD, I'm a fan of Hellboy. We've been talking about a lot of these books, and they've been going in a bunch of different directions in the whole Mignola verse. I was bowled over by the fact that we were getting a direct continuation of the whole Hellboy BPRD saga here as we follow Koshki the Undying in Hell. He decides, you know what, I'm going to get out of this stasis that I've been in here and sort of go on an adventure that's going to follow up on a bunch of the dangling threads from Hellboy. This is very exciting to me. I'm curious to hear if you in the same way.
I felt like this was, if you've been missing straight up Hellboy stories that have a continuity to them, we've been getting a lot of sort of one-off and non-high stakes adventures for Hellboy. Mm-hmm. This feels very much like the Hellboy when it was the main series, dealing with all the prophecy stuff and the fate of what the Hellboy was meant to be on Earth to do, with just a different character at the helm. So if you've been jonesing for some Hellboy, this is your shot.
Yeah, I was super. This was one of my favorite of the week. I thought this was, classic. Felt like classic Hellboy. Such a cool story. Great kind of first issue. I was sad this is one of four. I really want this to go more. I want more, but this right. is just. I can't take away from it because I'm only getting four issues. This is just, it just feels so great. And I feel like this was a really solid first issue that really got you into this world and kind of excited for this adventure.
STB, some timely baguettes.
Super tight bananas art, brah!
Strange Academy Finals, number two from Marvel, written by Scotty Young, art by Umberto Ramos. In this issue, the folks at Strange Academy are dealing with cleaning up their academy while a bunch of others are working on taking it down. Things go wrong by the end of the issue. We really like the first issue here. How'd you feel about the second one?
I like this. Ramos's art is excellent. This issue, I was surprised. It starts out pretty bright and shiny and then gets pretty dark by the end of it. I think this book has the spirit of like your younger X-Men, like your new X-Men or your new mutants from back in the day. And that's something we aren't seeing in the X-Men universe really at all.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the art was the real champion of this. I just love the art so much. But yeah, I'm enjoying what's happening here. I feel like the urgency, the meat is, I feel like we're building towards something cool. So seemed nice.
Nightwing 2022 annual number one from DC Comics Run Tide, written by Tom Taylor, Jake Kristoff, and C.S. Paquette, art by Eduardo Pensico and Inaki Miranda. We're getting a couple of stories here, but the main one is a essential story if you've been reading Nightwing. Yeah. It is the origin of, I keep getting this villain's name wrong, but Heartbreaker, I believe. It reveals finally how he's come to be and what's going on with him and where he came from and what his goals are. But added into that, I was a little worried about veering off of Tom Taylor for two more stories because his Nightwing stories have been so phenomenal. But these were great. Every single story in here was a great Nightwing story. This was an awesome issue.
The villain's name is Heartless, Heartless. Believe, and
that's why Zalbin didn't pick up on it, because that's just how he rolls.
Mm. He's Heartless.
I don't care or get it.
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, I'm one of the biggest fans of Nightwing on this one of the top three Nightwing fans on this podcast, and so I. You know I love this. I love taking the time to really get into a villain's origin in the annual and the extra stories. I do have a question. This between this issue and one we're going to talk about later, Batgirl's 2022 annual number one. Barbara Gordon is in a wheelchair, I believe, in that issue and not in this issue, right? Am I crazy there?
No, she's just sitting down a lot in Batgirl's.
But the chair has wheels, I thought.
Does it? She has, if I remember correctly, she has a chip in her spine that is allowing her to walk, but it's still an effort for her. Like they haven't invalidated the fact that she has trouble walking. They're not making it like a magic cure or anything like that. So maybe in Batgirl, she does have a wheelchair and that is what she is using because it's more comfortable for her versus Nightwing. They've decided to lean into her being Batgirl. Potentially. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just unclear on it. And I guess she is standing up sometimes and she's just sometimes in a wheelchair. So I don't know.
Anyways, getting back to this, I really thought this was like, really touching, that kind of having Nightwing train Superman there, that was really cool. Loved the kind of learned it from Batman line. Thought that was just a really such a great powerful line. I thought this was a solid comic, some fantastic art, you know what I mean?
There you go. Stillwater number 16 from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Ramon King Perez. This is getting to the end here with Stillwater. I believe we have two more issues after this. And here we get the origins of Stillwater, the town where nobody ever dies. We finally find out what is going on and what is happening here. Big revelations. Great issue. I was not expecting this here, and I guess I did not know that it was going to be ending in three issues, but the way they roll out this revelation was really well done.
I agree. This comic is interesting in that it feels like it's been going on for a long time, and it's taking its time telling the story, and I'm sort of like, let's get to it. Well, at the same time, it feels like, oh my God, we're here already? It's coming to the end? It feels sort of surprising in both directions.
Yeah, I agree. But also the art is super tight bananas. And it was crazy how far back they went to kind of give us the answers. Very interesting.
There you go.
Yeah, that's right. Salty trumpet, boys. Same for me.
Damn Them All, number two from Boom Studios, written by Simon Spurrier, art by Charlie Adlard. This is continuing the story of, well, it's not Constantine's daughter, but it essentially, if you want to think about it in that direction, it's kind of like that, right? But she's dealing with a bunch of mob stuff. There's some crazy stuff happening with the demon world that she's dealing with. This is great. We talked about it the last issue, like Simon Spurrier doing the same thing that Kieran Gillen did with Once and Future in terms of giving us like a high octane action movie. Here, it's a high octane mob movie with demon stuff when Simon Spurrier usually goes wildly off the rails in weird directions, laudably so. I continue to really like this, and Charlie Adlar's art is reliable as always.
Yes, the other two things I would say about this is the dialogue is really well done from just a writing standpoint, but also the way it's expressed and lettered on the page is really interesting, with like some trailing off sentences and different words emphasized. So that's really cool and specific and unique about this book. The other thing I want to say is the premise is really great. While the story's complex, the idea that all of the demons in hell have been sort of tamed and are up for grabs for people on Earth to use to do whatever they want to do with them is a great, cool premise, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, I agree with JT Sizz over there. This is very unique and creative. It's also fun and super crazy. I love the way the art matches the tone of this. They do such a great job with the colors and the kind of inking and all the different kind of like layers to it. It's got a whole vibe to it that I really appreciate. I think this is a fantastic comic and definitely one of the ones that you should check out. This is just getting better and better with each issue.
X-Terminators number 3 from Marvel, written by Leah Williams, art by Carlos Gomez. In this issue, Boom Boom, Jubilee, and Dazzler, as well as X-23/Wolverine, are trapped in a fairy cage by some vampires. We are finding out more about that. This book continues to be wild and profane in all the right ways. I had another very fun time reading this issue. How about you guys?
Well, the one thing I just wanted to say, the way you did X and then kind of paused, I thought you were going to say, like, X couldn't give it to you, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, that
did you think that pause. Alex was going to say, you think Alex was going to say X going to give it to you?
And I was like, going to give it to me?
He was waiting for you to do it.
Oh, well, anyways.
Hey, Pete, knock, knock on the door. It's real.
On the door. Who's there? This is fun. I'm answering to the knock knock at the door.
Mm-hmm. It's real.
What?
Okay, go ahead.
What
just happened? Was it a knock knock joke there?
No, it's X gonna give it to you. That's a lyric from it. Don't worry about it, Pete. Okay. Go ahead. You wouldn't know. You're not a real DMX fan like me.
Oh my God. Don't even, bro. Fucking Rough Riders, we in here, bro. All right. I don't even want to fucking. That Paul Reiser bit was mine, motherfucker. Anyways,
not a sentence you hear very often.
Trying to connect those thoughts, podcast listeners.
This comic was right up at Zelvin's alley here. This is, his favorite team up here. A lot of talking about boobs and touching boobs. So the pervy Zelb was having the time of his life. Good for you. I'm glad they make comics for you. And maybe eventually they'll make more for me, but who knows?
Eventually they'll make more.
Maybe. Someday. Coming from the Punisher fan on the podcast. Though I am with Alex on this. I really like this. It does feel like a fun road trip story with some X-Men you don't get to see hang out together. And while there is a lot of like TNA in this book, it's not about guys, male characters being with them and seeing them. It seems to be about them cutting loose and doing what they want to do. It does sort of track with who these characters are, I think, or at least some of them. And I think it's fun.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And granted, we are three guys on a podcast talking about this, but it does feel like Leah Williams is framing it up not in a very male gaze kind of way. It's not the sort of thing that, frankly, not to throw somebody under the bus, but like a Scott Lobdell would do back in the day where it would be like creepy. This feels fun and goofy, and there's a playfulness here that I'm really enjoying. It's a fun book. Definitely check it out. Detective Comics 2022 Annual Number 1 from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Christopher Mitten and Raphael Albuquerque with Hayden Sherman. This is another story from the DC universe where we're getting a bunch of different stuff in an annual. What did you guys think? Can you tell that I don't remember what happened here?
Well, yeah, this is old-timey Batman in the olden times.
That's right. Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great art, fun. It's not really my cup of tea, but it's enjoyable. People like things set back in old-timey things now, so fucking great.
I think I reviewed another comic with this same quote last week, but it is like one of those old Elseworlds annuals. It's very much like a Gotham City origin story where a Batman situation occurs well before our current Batman situation. You know what
Batman,
I mean?
Batman, the situation?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Jersey Shore.
That does always weird me out, and it took me a while to get into the idea of like hundreds of years ago, there was also a Two-Face, and hundreds of years ago, there was a Poison Ivy and a Batman and all this stuff. So – to your point, once I finally got on board with like, oh, right, we're telling an Elseworlds story here. This is not like literally the history of Gotham City, though maybe it is. That certainly seems to be what RamV is leading into here.
Well, and also this type of storytelling of like, look, it's happening again, is rife. Comic books are rife with that type of story. Yeah.
Yes. And it also
1602.
And to be fair, this is something that was established by Grant Morrison, because I think what they're playing off of here is when Batman, quote unquote, died getting killed by Darkseid in Final Crisis, he traveled throughout time and reverberated all these things. Yeah. So I think that's what they're playing with here. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, I guess. Yes, Pete.
Just so you know, for future, so you sound a little bit smarter, you want to pronounce it to be fair. That's the best way to do
that. Oh, I thought you were going to say Barbados or something like that. Barbatos is actually how you pronounce it. All right. Lovesick number 2 from Image Comics by Luana Vecchio. This is Pete's favorite issue of the week, I think.
Pick of the week.
Pete's pick of the week. Pete, you love seeing little piggies split open end to end. Pete, take it away.
What are we fucking doing with this? Why are you glamorizing? This comic grossed me the fuck out. And I was just like, you know what? This is not, I don't want to be in this world. I don't want to read comics supporting what's happening here. I don't want to be like, hey, go out and check out this thing if you want to murder people and cut them open. That guy was tortured for 3 fucking years, man. That shit was really, really fucked up. And I wish I didn't have to read that comic. I wish I could not read that comic. I wish I could go back in time and stop myself and be like, hey, don't read this comic that fucking Zalbin put on this fucking list.
I'm sorry, Pete. I'm very confused. So you don't like to see little piggies squeal as the life goes out of their eyes?
Answer the question.
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. That doesn't seem consistent with everything that I've known about you for the past 15 years, but all right.
Well, I'm sorry, dude. I'm not going to dress up in some kind of weird S&M thing and then torture people for my own followers or whatever the fuck is going on, man.
Yeah. Well, what about, let me just throw something out at you. Do you think the
world is weird enough?
Do you like to see a lady tits out of the bathtub getting split apart by a piggy guy and picturing her own death and getting kind of turned on by it? Because I feel like you've mentioned that a couple of times on the podcast. You love that, right, Pete?
No, I definitely don't. No, I definitely don't. And it sucks that you put that image in my head. You know what I mean?
Well, the comic put it in your head when you read it.
Yeah, he put it on the fucking list. Tons of comics that came out this week, and we had to include this fucking one in there.
Did you finish it?
Yeah.
Did you finish, Pete? See? Did you finish, Pete?
No. I don't think I ever will again after that.
Did you feel spent after you read this, Pete?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
I also found this unsettling to read. I was reading this on the subway.
Oh, I was too tired.
You're that guy. I was too tired to like be careful. But I finished it and I was getting off and I looked over the lady next to me and I was like, oh shit, you saw that comic that I was
that
reading.
Sentence you just said, I finished, I was getting off, and then the lady looked at me. I mean, that's just a weird sentence.
Pete,
there.
That's disgusting. I don't know why you put that out there. Alex and I are on our best behavior and you're going to bring that stuff up? Yeah. I mean, I just feel like someone needs to blow into your butthole. It's classic Pete. Someone needs to puff the Pete fluff. We need to Pete the seat and puff the fluff.
Why, Zalbin? Why? Defend this comic one time.
Sure. I think the art is very good. Here's what I'll say is that I did think, based on the discussion, I thought we had an interesting discussion about the first issue in terms of how it is going very hard on incel culture and it's not shying away from all the stuff that legitimately is happening on the dark web. Like, this is real things. And if you read the back matter, Luana Vecchio talks about it. This is real things that unsettled Luana Vecchio when he was looking into this book and researching this book that were very upsetting, that are actually going on in certain aspects. Maybe not as exaggerated as this, but tying back to the discussion that we had on the live show in terms of real life issues, incel culture, the way that it deals with women and the way that it feels about women, the core of this book is about these hyped up incels and these hyped up women who are like, we're going to deal with toxic mass culture, male culture, excuse me, in the most apocalyptic way and disgusting way and graphic way possible. That's what the book is about. It's supposed to feel unsettling. Do I want to read it? Not necessarily. It doesn't make me feel comfortable to read it. I don't enjoy reading it. But I do appreciate the fact that we do have somebody that is dealing with these things head on and using the comics medium to deal with them head on in the most, I hope, I've never been on the dark web, but I hope most exaggerated way possible to really push these issues forward and push them to the forefront, because ultimately I think that's what the comics medium is for. If it doesn't work for everybody, as it clearly does not work for you, Pete, I think made you uncomfortable on the subway, Justin, and made me uncomfortable when I went to a playground and showed it to all of the kids in the playground, equally uncomfortable for all three of us. I think, I'm glad it exists because it is something that is trying something, whether it works or not. And I think ultimately that's what comics should be doing, is they should be trying things. They should be going through things and experimenting. That's the point of experiments. Sometimes your theorems do not work.
My only response to that is I think you're right about that. But this comic seems to be showing us without giving us that sort of like takeaway or that sort of like spin on it where I'm like, oh, I see what the comment here is. It is just exposing this underworld to our eyes. And that I want a little bit of a
take on it.
And
glamorizing it even and making it seem like it's good, and which is, it shouldn't be. Also, you know, taking the artistic kind of stance of like, it should be able to, you know, freedom of speech, all that kind of stuff. Great. I understand people should be allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. Right. And I think that's true. You know, exposing things in the dark web. But yeah, I don't know. But my point is, we only have so many comics that we can see, talk about and promote. This comic not only ruined my experience with this comic, it then ruined a perfectly innocent comic that had nothing to do with this that I couldn't then enjoy because of this fucking piece of shit.
Are you talking about Owly, right?
If I had to read Owly right after that, it might have fucked Owly up, but yeah. I had to read Plush.
Did you read that issue of Owly where he was tits out of the bathtub getting split open by a pig mouth?
No, because that's not. Don't drag the innocence and the magnificence that is Owly into your shitstorm.
I understand what you're saying, Pete. Stop blaming me for something that we're all agreeing on. I think, Justin, your point is very apt here, that the first issue, there felt like this promise of we are hardcore going into this incel culture versus how women could respond in the most over-the-top way possible to push back on that. I think we lose that a little bit in the second issue in terms of just raw exploitation. I think the next issue is the last issue, and I don't know if we'll get back to that point in the third issue.
Don't you put that on the fucking stack.
I guess.
You got to close it out.
I'm not reading it.
We got to close it out. We'll read that, and then we'll read a couple of, like, real raunchy issues of Owly. Why don't we move on and talk about...
I'm not reading it.
Sorry.
It's really bad.
The Roadie number three, the art's very good. The Roadie number three from Dark Horse Comics written by, and I was also, sorry, last thing that I'm going to say, the fact that it spurred on this much discussion from us, I think is a good thing and a testament to what they are trying to do with the comic.
That's right, Pete.
Well, I'm glad that you're having fun, Zalbin. I'm not. And it also hurt another comic. You know what I mean?
Which other comic are you talking about? Plush?
I had to read this comic, and then I had to read Plush. And I couldn't fucking read Plush because it was this comic.
You had to read all of Alan Moore's Lost Girls just to scrub your brain after this, right, Pete?
There you go.
Oh, I don't even know what you're saying. I just think
it's very bad what I'm saying.
There's interesting things to talk about, and there are big topics to talk about. I don't really want to talk about fucked up people doing fucked up things. There's horrible people all over the world doing horrible things. You know, like, I don't want to give them any more time or have them look good, which they do in this issue.
You're absolutely right. Let's stop talking about fucked up people doing fucked up things and instead talk about the Roadie, number three from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tim Seeley, art by Fred Gallant. In this issue, our titular Roadie is taking his daughter that he's just found out about, trying to hide her from the demons who are tracking her down. Some crazy stuff happens with demons and some messed up stuff. Pete, you want to take it away? You want to talk about this one? What's going on? What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is fun. This is just demons and a fun story. Cool demon shit. Good art. You know, it's hard to not keep talking about what just happened. But I think that this is just Tim Seeley. He kind of has this creative, weird mind that I think is explored really well in this comic. And there's always kind of a little bit of heart in Tim Seeley's stuff that comes through. And yeah, I enjoy his writing.
Yeah, I agree. If you liked the comic The Scumbag by Rick Remender, this feels like something that could fill a little bit of that hole after The Scumbag ended.
Yes, and if you like the demon stuff that's going on in Avengers Assemble Alpha, and then also like the fucked up stuff that's happening in Lovesick, if you kind of like mix them together, I think you get the Roadie. And there you go. Right, Pete? Pete? No? Pushed it too far? Okay, fair enough. I think this book is very good. Like you guys are saying, there's a lot of heart going on here. It's very fun. It's very creative. I'm bummed that it's ending with the next issue. Let's talk about the Wildstorm 30th Anniversary Special number one from DC Comics, written by, are you ready, Brandon Choi, Matthew Rosenberg, J. Scott Campbell, Greg Pak, Warren Ellis, Ed Bryson, Chris Jose Gage, Brett Booth, Megan Fitzmartin, Dan Abnett, Joshua Gage. Williamson, art by Jim Lee, Stefano Landini, J. Scott Campbell, Mingyu Jung, Brian Hitch, Mike Henderson, Dustin Nguyen, Jeff Spokes, Brett Booth, Will Conrad, Neil Googe, and John Boy Myers. This is, as you can figure out by the title, a bunch of stories that are paying tribute to the legacy of Wildstorm. There's a lot of great stuff going on here, particularly if you like the Wildstorm universe. Also, not to fly under the radar, DC just sneaked Warren Ellis back in there, despite the fact that he was accused of abuse by multiple creators and fans. That's pretty fucked up. Take it away, guys.
Yeah. And the fact that you, all right. So first story was pretty damn intense. I feel like in a good way. Second story was good. The Better Days, super sad, but ends with some hope. The Greg Pak Hawksmoor story was really great. We got kind of a new kind of Hawksmoor powered kind of person in there, so that's exciting. Some real fun pinup art splash pages they do throughout the book, which is great when you're getting like an anniversary special. And of course, the Midnight or Apollo story just gets you in the feels.
Wow, what a breakdown of the book there. This reminded me, it's like going back to a high school reunion, this book, because you see like, oh, look, that person really did something with themselves. Look, the grifters and now sort of a main character, DC. And you see other people, you're like, I haven't seen much of them lately. They haven't been doing much, very much. And obviously, I read these comics when I was much younger. So definitely that. I really liked the Together story. Also interesting, Midnight or Apollo really dealing with the fallout from the War World stuff here, which I didn't expect to have those continuity touchstones. I thought the Grifter story in the middle of the book was really fun. The Gen 13 felt very on Gen 13. Classic mixed bag.
Classic mixed bag.
Well, go ahead, Bate. Sorry.
I was just going to say, as far as the Warren Ellis stuff, I don't know what's been going on or what's happened. I assume if somebody is being, you know, kind of let back into a position of power there, that things are okay. But I don't know that to be true, or I don't know. So I don't. It's weird to kind of have this be happening.
It's pretty weird, and this is a extremely broad overview of the situation, but he was accused of abuse by multiple folks, as I mentioned. They said to him, hey, if you take steps to work with people professionally and get better, as well as apologize to all of us and work with us and follow steps, and there was a whole website created, we will work with you to improve the situation. And he was like, absolutely, I'm going to do that. And as far as we know, none of that has happened. And now he's running for DC again. So that's bad. That's a bad thing that DC did, is basically what I can say. That said, in terms of this issue, as somebody who has no real tie to the Wildstorm universe, I can say it got better as it went along, I think. You mentioned the Greg Pak story, which I thought was great, and then the Matthew Rosenberg
really good
stuff.
Hawksmore.
Yeah, it was really, really good as well. So I was left very lost by the first half of the book. And then as it went on in the second half of the book, this is like 100 pages or something. They started to get to actual stories where I could like sink my teeth in a little bit. So that was good stuff.
It's interesting because it got very much more DC and more continuity laden as it went on. It's interesting that you like those better. A lot of people, maybe Wildstorm purists,
potentially. There you go. Like the Gen 13 thing, I was like, I don't know what's going on here. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But
that's what the book was like.
Yes. Why don't we move on and talk about Rogue Son number 8 from Image Comics, written by Ryan Parrott, art by Abel. In this issue, Rogue Son is getting back to the main continuity after a couple of wild issues. Here he's doing some training, figuring out how to use his superhero powers, and we get a new villain stepping up to take him down. I was very excited to read this after the last Choose Your Own Adventure issue, which might be one of my issues of the year, frankly. This book continues to be great. Like, I think this is maybe my favorite book at the Massiveverse right now. I just think they're crushing it every issue. I'm just having a really good time reading this. How are you guys feeling?
Yeah, I agree. The art is just, super tight bananas. And I feel like I love the action. Also, he has a little quippy moments in here. Is building in a great way. I felt like this was just such a solid issue, kind of back to where kind of, this thing is kind of rolling again, and it feels great.
I agree. I thought this was STB Sriracha to brother. Get some sriracha to my brother when it comes to this book.
Man, I'm glad we're talking about your brother. I miss that guy. He's a lot funnier than you are.
Yeah. Wow. Dead Maul number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Adam Cesari, art by David Stoll. In this issue, our teens are still trapped in an old mall that is infested with ghosts or demons or spirits or something like that that are taunting them and occasionally breaking some of their bones in very graphic ways. We felt like, if I remember correctly, the first issue was intriguing, but took a little while to get to the premise and what was going on. We get a little bit more of it in this issue. How are you feeling as of issue 2? Justin, how are you feeling about it?
Very unsettling, this comic. This comic is some good horror in that it feels unrelenting. Like, the book doesn't give, the story doesn't give the characters any way out or any real options, and it forces them to make exclusively bad choices that we see the bad results of. So it has darkness to it, and we get maybe some help here that is immediately ruined by one of the characters. So I'm curious what the light at the end of the tunnel here is. But if you want an unsettling book, this is definitely that.
The cover is so gross. It's like lipstick, but it's a dead finger, and it's so fucking gross. Inside is, I was trying to read this and I kept being like, nope, no, 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 no. This is too scary. It's too fucked up. I had a hard time reading it. the horror of it all was just a little too much for me. But the art is great. And if you like horror, you should check this out, because I was fucking really scared. And it kind of really plays with a lot of my fears. Just no, thank you.
My main takeaway for this book, and I say this as somebody who has seen literally one of the movies, the most recent one, but by the end of the book, I was like, oh, this is Hellraiser, is what they're doing. It's people being given these delicious gifts and their flesh being mangled beyond repair. So if you like those movies, I think you'll probably like this. DC's Grifter Got Run Over by a Reindeer, number one from DC Comics, written by Stephanie Williams, Max Bemis, Dave Wiegoss, Scott Brian Wilson, John Layman, Michael W. Conrad, Kevin Scott, and Derek Friedels. Art by David Lapham, Pablo M. Collar, PJ Holden, Skylar Patridge, Juan Doe, Brennan Wagner, Fico Osseo, Carlos Danda, and Dustin Wynn. This is another collection of holiday stories set in the DC universe. Of particular note, I would say I loved going back to the little Gotham universe that Dustin Wynn did. I believe that's issue. Sorry, we did a lot of collections this week, so I'm not remembering specifically.
That is this issue.
So very fun to see that again. I'm a big fan of that stuff. But how did you guys feel about this one?
Yeah, I mean, the Dustin Wynn's art is great. The kind of little Gotham stuff is, and it's just fun. The Grifter kind of stealing stuff and getting run over. I mean, that's just, they're having some fun, and it seems, and it's a fun collection, and I thought it was silly and great. And, you know, if you're just looking for kind of a fun holiday special type of deal, this delivers.
A couple standouts, much like the book we just talked about, and Alex said it got better as it went on. I felt that way here. You get to see a good Harley story with the introduction of Mrs. Trixelchick, sort of her own Mitzelplick, which I thought was cool. I liked the Batman Catwoman story, sort of a cute gift-giving bit. Animal Man was sort of surprisingly poignant late in the book. The Grifter story, though, I thought that was super fun, had some just really great writing, really fun jokes throughout, and really enjoyed that. I was pleasantly surprised by that.
The Dead Lucky, number four from Image Comics, written by Melissa Flores, art by Fred Carlo Magno. This is another one of the massive verse books here, focusing on a woman who can harness ghosts to create electricity and control a robot, if I'm getting that correctly. And in this issue, we're following up on the conflict she has happening with the very OCP-style organization that is running a robot army in San Francisco. Now that we finally have this conflict set up, the characters set up, I'm very much into this book. I think the characters are good. I think the situation is good. The tension is very amped up in this issue, and I'm enjoying it. But how are you guys feeling?
I agree. I love her power set and the fact that it's very organically incorporated technology and ghosts as like sort of a superpower set. And it's it makes for a much more interesting fights.
Yeah, I mean, they do the kind of tripped out shit really well. I feel like this is really kind of picking up steam with everything. I agree with what you guys are saying. The kind of stylized art is just fantastic. I mean, this is super tight bananas here. I'm not going to say it so that way Justin can't fuck with me. But this is a lot of fun and a great ish.
Yeah, I agree, Pete. It's tits out in the bathtub, split end to end. Let's move on to the next one, Unbreakable Red Sonja.
Well, everybody has a catchphrase now, I guess. Everybody has a catchphrase.
You'll have to figure out
yours.
When's
that going to be on a t-shirt, Alex?
I'll make a t-shirt for that one, definitely. Unbreakable Red Sonja, number two from Dynamite, written by Jim Zub, art by Giovanni Valletta. In this issue, picking up on the cliffhanger of the last issue, a tiny young Red Sonja has either traveled forward in time or regular Red Sonja has traveled back in time. Either way, they're teaming up and traveling through the land together. Now that we finally got to the concept, I'm having a great time with this. I think Zubhub is writing the hell out of this book. It's a good fantasy book, and Giovanni Valletta's art is really good as well. How do you guys feel?
Let's celebrate the Zub Hub just like the Ewoks with a Yub Yub, because this is another great book in the Red Sonja world.
Yeah, I agree. I think this
you
is
You agree
just...
with what I said? You agree with that?
No. I agree with everything you said.
You agree with what I said. Okay.
I do. Yub Yub. Yep. That's one of my favorite songs, and I'm sad that they cut it out of the movie.
Wait, just real quick on that. That's one of your favorite songs? Like, you come home.
That was Pete's song at his wedding, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I mean, that actually makes some sense. I'm saying to come home and casually put on Yub Yub. That's crazy.
Exactly. You went to the jazz coach, you're like, hey, we want to do a waltz to Yub Dub.
And they're like, oh, this, yeah, sure. I've done this numerous times for couples. Yeah, yeah.
That's nice. Alex comes home to a comic about his day that his kids hate, and Pete comes out and puts on the Ewok dance.
That's right.
Really telling the story.
I also think that, you know, this isn't just a kind of like TNA comic. They're doing, I think, a better job of getting away from that a little bit.
There's none of that in this comic.
Well, you know, it's still a mesh bikini, which doesn't make any fucking sense, but...
Well, if it's hot, you don't want a heavy... It's lighter armor if there's less.
Dude, when you're fighting somebody, you don't want to have bare skin.
Iron Speedo that I wear in the water all the time.
Yeah, but that's...
Until it rusts.
That's a horrible idea. There's got to be a lot of drag on fucking putting metal. Anyways.
I agree with you, Pete. You got to have the chainmail everywhere to protect yourself from pig men splitting you end to end. Right, Pete? Is that...
Really?
Are you trying to push me out of this? You know what I mean? Are you trying to make me quit? Because I'm fucking close, bro. Keep pushing.
Oh my goodness.
Fuck you. Wow. Stop bringing up something that was fucking horrible.
Anyway, back to my iron Speedo. Something that's not horrible.
I would make another joke about this, but I think Pete's serious here. So why don't we move on to Batgirl's 2022 annual number one from DC Comics, written by Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad, art by Robbie Rodriguez. In this issue, we're getting a classic body-switching adventure for the Batgirls as Cassandra Cain and Stephanie Brown eventually switch bodies. I'll tell you what, I love this team. Robbie Rodriguez's art is great. Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad have a great time writing this book. The tone is so much fun. I just wanted to get to the body switching thing sooner, and maybe that's because it was teased on the cover, so I already knew what was going to happen. And it seems like we're going to be following that plot line in Batgirls. Super fun, but we don't get enough of, like, what does it mean that Stephanie is in Cassandra's body and Cassandra's in Stephanie's body, other than the setup in the last quarter of the book or so. So that's my only qualm with it. Otherwise, great fun issue as usual.
I liked it. I wasn't bothered by that. The idea that they're switching places and then put in very compromising situations for each of the other, I thought was really well done. And I look forward to more of this.
Yeah, it was more of a heightened Freaky Friday situation. I think that, it's definitely fun. The team on this has been killing it for a while, and I feel like this was a fun annual to kind of give them.
Prior number two from Boom Studios, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Jermaine Garcia. In this issue, we're continuing to follow our riff on Sleeping Beauty as she travels through, I don't know, post-apocalyptic fantasy land, I guess is the place way of describing it. She mixes it up with a bunch of fairies and other things in this issue. I know we're pretty high on the first issue. How are you feeling about the second one?
I remain high. I think this is a good story. Fables-esque, if you're looking for a good comp. But it seems like the team of characters is coming together and they keep wrecking stuff.
Yeah, I feel like this is crazy cool. I really think that it's interesting and fun, the takes that they're kind of risking with this. I think this has been really kind of cool, interesting take, that the art style is really impressive. And then also the last couple of panels, the great job of like giving you that kind of oh shit moment.
STB smoking two bazookas.
Last but not least, Nubia and the Justice League Special number one from DC Comics, written once again by Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad, as well as Stephanie Williams. Art by Amon K. Nahulpen and Aletha Martinez. In this issue, we are following Nubia as she gets a little bit of a tryout with the Justice League, and then a backup story as well. Pete, I know you're a big fan of the Nubia stuff. How'd you feel about this one?
Yeah, it was some really great covers. Classic art, had a really awesome feel to it. I'm loving the story. Everyone kind of gets to kind of meet the queen, and I felt like that was kind of real fun for everybody to, you know, Batman had a little bit of a faux pas there, but I thought it was a blast, and was kind of like a nice kind of behind the scenes moment that we got to witness, and I really appreciate it.
I feel like with Nubia, we've really gotten back to sort of the original Wonder Woman stuff, where we're having an Amazon coming to the rest of the planet and getting to see her point of view and what it means to be a hero out of sort of fish out of water situation. And it's really nice.
I agree. Fun stuff, fun stories. And if you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Time to puff the fluff.
Ha!